We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The Chicago Bears select.
Welcome to Picks for Polls, presented by The Bear Report. Your number one source for everything Chicago Bears draft news, analysis, scouting reports, and more. Presented by Blue Wire Pods. And now, making their way to the podium, Andrew Freeman and Usaid Koshal.
Welcome to Picks for Polls, a Chicago Bears draft podcast presented by the Bear Report and Blue Wire Pods. My name is Andrew Freeman, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Usaid Koshal, recording this episode on Wednesday, April 3rd. And Usaid, we're in draft month, man. We're just over 20 days away from the start of the 2024 NFL draft. It's not coming down to the wire quite yet, but we're getting there, slowly but surely. So it's going to be a hectic month or so as we wrap up a lot of our pre-draft work. And before we get started with our subject of today, how are you doing today, man?
Yeah, man, I'm doing well. You're right. You know, it seems like just yesterday we were in free agency sitting there randomly as the Bears went ahead and signed guys like Gerald Everett. And now everything's changed to the point where everything that people have been dreaming about since, I want to say, October, November, December probably is about to become a reality with the Caleb Williams selection. And then there's all the chatter around the ninth overall pick. So it is really, for once, it seems like on paper, the stars are actually aligning for the Bears to figure this out and break a more than 100-year-old curse.
Yeah, I mean, the Bears really have a chance to really change the course of the franchise here. Obviously, the number one overall pick, you know, they did meet with Caleb Williams officially for their top 30 visit. I think it was either yesterday or either tonight, I think it was the news that came out. But went out to dinner with him, brought him to the facility. It sounds like Caleb Williams, that's the only top 30 visit he's making. So connect the dots how you will. But yeah, I think it's pretty clear at this point that Caleb Williams is a Bear, which is exciting. We talked about it a bunch, though, that's going to be the thing that dominates the headlines, obviously, for the Bears. But there's still a lot, I think, more for the Bears in terms of how to cover this thing. You know, the real intrigue now becomes, now that number one overall is pretty much set in stone, what do the Bears do at number nine overall? And one of the positions we know that they're going to be looking to address in this draft is going to be the defensive line. And, you know, the defensive line for the Bears is a position that I think they've gotten better since Ryan Poles has gotten here. But, you know, you look at this unit still, it's still a unit that I think needs a lot of influx of talent here to kind of complement what they have in terms of, you know, they made the big trade for Montez Sweat last year. That really worked out for them. You know, Javon Dexter came along as the year went along in his rookie season last year. But outside of that, like, you got some decent contributors here, but edge rusher, interior defensive line, still a unit that needs a lot of help. And that's going to be the unit we're going to be covering today for our position previews. And there's a lot of interesting talents to talk about here when it comes to potential fits for the Bears.
Yeah, and it's this really intriguing position because the Bears have invested a lot of draft capital into this thing. You look at Ryan Poles has basically taken a defensive lineman every single year since he's been here. Now, obviously, we've only got 2 years of NFL draft worth to go off of in terms of draft picks, but you look at Dominique Robinson his first year and then follows it up the next year by kind of shocking everyone and taking Jervon Dexter in the second round and then going ahead and doubling down on it, taking Zach Pickens last year with the 76th overall selection in round three. So it's kind of this situation where, you know, you have seen how much investment has taken place. And that's not even counting the contracts that were handed out to guys like DeMarcus Walker and Rasheem Green, Terrell Lewis, you know, a massive extension being handed out and a second round pick for Montez Sweat. And so it's a weird kind of conundrum that the Bears find themselves in, where in an ideal world, your two defensive tackles are Jervon Dexter and Zach Pickens heading into this year. But then again, you still look at it and you say, okay, well, there's questions because you don't know what they're going to do opposite Montez Sweat. Who's going to be the guy to step up there? Who's going to be the one that can come in and be kind of that number two edge rusher that, quite frankly, still will need a year to develop, while Montez Sweat is kind of the superstar? And then maybe going into next year, we talk about the Bears having one of the best, you know, 1-2 pass rush duos in the league. But again, there's still work to be done for this unit, because it's a good unit right now, but it can be even better.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you look at the guys that they brought in, you know, DeMarcus Walker's a free agent, right? Jervon Dexter, Zach Pickens last year in the draft, even Andrew Billings as a free agent signing. I think the big thing is, like, yes, while there is some talent here, some guys that can contribute and potentially be, you know, long-term pieces for this team moving forward, none of those moves should, you know, preclude or prevent the Bears from making a move in this draft, whether it's bringing in an edge rusher or a defensive tackle to try to upgrade that position. And really, I mean, you should be trying to build your defensive lines like Howie Roseman builds his defensive lines in Philadelphia anyway, which, whereas you're 8-9 guys deep on that defensive line rotation, and you can just rotate guys in constantly throughout the game to keep them fresh. That's the way you should be trying to build it anyways. So in my opinion, I mean, you can never add too many good pass rushers to your team and just come at teams in waves, I think. And I think that's how, if they're going to be successful in the way that Eflus wants to run his defense, where I don't think he wants to blitz as much as he had to last year. I think he wants to run more of that traditional, you know, I wouldn't say Tampa style, but you know, that four down front, four-man rush type of defense where they're going to, you know, play zone coverage on the back end, you know, kind of be conservative in their coverages there and let the pass rush, four-man pass rush, get to the quarterback, create pressure, and then create turnover opportunities. I think that's the way that Eberflus wants to run his defense. In order to do that, though, you need to have multiple guys that can get to the quarterback. They got one right now, Montez Sweat. Need to continue to add to that unit. So how we're going to do this today is, you know, we're going to be breaking down the edge rushers and interior defensive line class this year, giving you guys our top five for each position group, some sleepers to kind of look over in the, on the later rounds of the draft, and then some guys that maybe we're not as high on, especially for as fit for the Bears. So let's get into our top five edge rushers here. You say it. I'll start with you. Who is on your list for your top five edge rushers?
Yeah, well, for, you know, 1, 2, and 3, you look at it, and really it's kind of a toss-up because you could group these guys either as 1, 2, or 3, but you've got Jared Verse, Leetu Latu, and Dallas Turner. Again, now, for me, kind of, I look at this whole thing, and I say, okay, well, who truly is the top guy? I think, number one, you're going to get Dallas Turner from Alabama. Again, a guy who kind of had to last year live in the shadow of Will Anderson, but sort of broke out in his own way this year. And again, Dallas Turner is a very intriguing guy because he can put his hand in the dirt, but he can still go ahead and, you know, be a stand-up pass rusher when needed. He's got some really nice rip and club moves. I think the measurables kind of checked out for him at the combine. What you overall just see is a player who is just really fast, strong, quick, explosive off the ball, you know, has a really good first step, has some really nice arm length as well to kind of keep working around those tackles. So I think, you know, Dallas Turner is a guy where he's the complete package in a sense, and he's going to be kind of your consistent, you know, 10 to 12 sack guy every single year for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I think you talk about the big three between Latu, Verse, and Dallas Turner. You know, for me, if I'm putting these guys in order. Like every single one of them, I think, has a flaw or a question mark that I think holds them back from being really tier one edge rushers that you're looking for. Let's say like I mean, Myles Garrett was a freak of his own nature, a freak of nature in his own right. But in that class of edge rusher, right, when you're looking at a guy who's going to be, you know, is going to be a bona fide all pro at the next level, I'm talking about a Bosa brother, you know, Chase Young as a prospect, you know, was on that level, I'd say. Myles Garrett on that level as a prospect, even going back further to guys like Khalil Mack coming out of college. There's no one like that in this year's draft. But I think when you look at your top three, these are three guys who I think are bona fide first round prospects. I think in terms of like what you're looking for on film, Latu is the top, you know, top talent in terms of what you're getting production wise right away coming into the NFL. This guy is one of the most polished pass rushers that we've seen enter the NFL in a very long time. He's got every move in his bag, right? He's got counters on top of counters. He knows how to set tackles up. He's got the requisite physical tools, I feel like, to make it work. The big issue for him that I think a lot of people are talking about is, you know, what's the medical situation, right? And I think if you feel good about the fact that he's got a fused neck that he had to take, what, 2 or 3 years off from football, to let that injury heal, you know, he basically had to quit football because of that neck injury. So how long is that going to hold up in the NFL? How long is that going to keep up in terms of his physical tools being able to maintain that over the course of, you know, a 17-game season going on 5, 6, 7, 8 years into his career? Those are the big question marks for Latu. In terms of, like, what you're getting on tape, the tape is excellent. He's got one of the best pass-rushing profiles we've seen from an edge rusher entering the NFL. I mean, he has back-to-back elite pass-rushing seasons. This past year, look at what he did from a production standpoint. Just doing the quick math right here. He had over 60 pressures in his final season at UCLA, a 96.3 overall grade, 94.3 pass rush grade, according to PFF. So this guy is an elite, elite pass rusher who just knows how to get after the quarterback. I wouldn't say he's got elite physical traits. That's probably the other thing that I think a lot of scouts are going to question about him is, you know, how much juice does he actually have at the next level? But man, in terms of the tape, it's excellent. Now you kind of compare that to a guy like Dallas Turner, who has steadily gotten better, I think, over the course of his career at Alabama. Definitely looked more the part, I think, this last year as he's kind of bulked up a little bit. But he is the freaky athletic guy who is just reaching his ceiling. He's 21 years old. He's kind of reaching that age where he's going to start coming into his own physically for the position. So you're looking at Dallas Turner, and yes, he's not been as productive as Latu, but the projection is there. The trajectory is going up. So to me, you know, between those two, I think for me, those are the top two guys in this draft class. I think if you want a guy who's going to be a day one contributor, a day one impact guy, Latu is the guy you're looking for. If you're looking for that upside, though, I can see Turner being more appealing to a lot of these teams because he does have the physical tools. He's got elite length, 34-inch arms. He's got a great first step, very explosive athlete. And the production is coming along as well. Like, he's gotten better every year. It's not like he's a total projection at this point. He does have some moves to build off of here. It may just take him a year or two before you really see him reach his ceiling.
Yeah, and you kind of hit home on Verse and Latu in terms of, you know, a lot of the positives, but also some of the negatives. I think, you know, for me, having Jared Verse there at number two, you look at this insanely productive player who, again, you know, started off playing, I believe, at University of Albany, then went ahead and transferred over to Florida State. And again, what you basically see with him is this, is a really quick, strong, fast, explosive guy, a guy whose motor never really seems to be off. He's kind of always on and is going to get after the pass rusher. I think you look at him and you kind of go ahead and say, okay, he's got a versatile arsenal of pass rush moves, and he's really able to kind of get home as many times as he can. Now you look at Latu Latu, and again, you know, the neck injury is a major thing for him. It's something where you kind of look at and you say, okay, well, where exactly does he kind of fit? You know, having spent 3 years in at Washington, then taking a couple of years off and coming back in 2022, and you know, the reality again is just very simple for Latu. Is number one, the neck injury is a major concern. he should technically, if it wasn't for the neck injury, be the clear cut number one edge rusher in this class. But again, those injuries are going to push him down. But what you still see is a lot to love on film, right? Like, he's takes some really phenomenal angles to the ball. He knows and understands how to use his hands and, you know, deliver that initial first punch. And then he's able to go ahead and, you know, just win inside against the guards. And Latu, what I love about him is he's going to help defensive coordinators get super creative, because it's not just going to be a one lane rush for him. It's going to be a two or three lane rush for him, coupled with the defensive end, or I'm sorry, yeah, the defensive ends along with the defensive tackles. Like, you're going to have a whole bunch of twists, and a twist blitz essentially is what defensive coordinators are going to want to run with him. But it's not just going to be something where it's like Latu running up the B gap and the defensive end running up the A gap, for example. No, it's going to be an opposite. You know, it's going to be something that's going to be switched. And he's got the smart and the instincts to be able to, you know, come in and contribute right away. But then again, the question really is, how much is his neck going to hold up in the long run? Because it's very risky to take him right now, because, you know, those neck injuries do tend to end careers.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, it's a scary thing to kind of think about, right? And I think that's something that we've seen Ryan Poles in the past. You know, he's based a lot of his moves off of that kind of being a little bit more conservative in terms of taking risk on injuries, right? So he's been a little bit risk averse in terms of injury concerns. And Latu, I mean, if the Bears were going to draft Latu, you would have to think that the medicals come back completely sparkling clean in order to make that pick, right? Like, there can't be any concerns about it, whether it's short term, long term. Like, they've got to really feel comfortable about the medicals to make that decision. Because I really do think Latu, if we're just evaluating who he is as a football player, I really do think he's the best edge rusher. Where it becomes problematic is the fact that I'm not sure if I'm getting a full, you know, a full 5'7". I don't know if he's going to get to a second contract, you know, because of the health issues, right? So that kind of scares me a little bit. If I were a team like maybe the Falcons, where, you know, you have a limited kind of window you're going for with Kirk Cousins as your quarterback, I think Latu's a perfect fit for that situation. Right, because he can just come in right away. They got some dudes on that defensive line already. He can be an impact guy for that pass rush that they desperately need, and it'd be a really good fit. You kind of play out the last couple of years of Kirk Cousins' career playing in Atlanta. For the Bears, where you're kind of still looking for a long term piece to build alongside, you know, Caleb Williams on the opposite side of the ball to be kind of your star pass rusher there and complement Montez Sweat. You're probably looking for more of the upside play, right? And that's when you get into prospects such as Dallas Turner and then Jared Verse, who you have number two. I have him as my number three edge rusher in this class. And I mean, there's a couple of reasons why that's the case. I mean, for me, Jared Verse, the positives are obviously the power profile that he has. He has one of the better, I think, abilities to convert speed to power in this draft class among edge rushers. Really explosive out of his stance, explosive first step. Knows how to use his length and power to his advantage and leverage to his advantage. Does a really nice job of pushing the pocket, which I think a lot of teams are going to appreciate about him. For me, when it comes to Verse, is I'm not sure if he really has the upside to be like a number one edge rusher on a team. I think he's better off as kind of that number two edge rusher who pushes the pocket, maybe he's not getting like 12, 14 sacks a year. He's more of like an 8 to 10 sack guy, which is fine. It's not a bad thing to have on your roster for sure. The real question for the Bears comes in is, are you drafting that guy at number 9 overall? Probably not, right? The other thing with Versa is he's going to be 24 years old as a rookie. So he's an older rookie coming in. You're probably not looking at a guy who has a super high upside. I think this is kind of the big point that I'm seeing. If I'm in like the 20s, though, late teens in the first round, I think Jared Verse is a very good player to kind of target there because he's pretty polished. You know what you're getting out of him. And I think he does have a high enough of a ceiling to where you think he can be an impact player for you on his rookie deal and even on a second-year deal, depending on how he develops going forward here. He's just going to be a little bit older, which, you know, for some teams it matters, some teams it doesn't, right? But we'll talk about the top three guys. Let's get to edge 4 and 5. I think this is where a lot of different people covering the draft really start to differ on this class because I think there's a clear top three, kind of similar to the wide receivers. There's a clear top three that we all feel is going to go in the first round. But edge 4, edge 5, and beyond, it really depends wildly on, you know, the type of player that you prefer. And I think scheme's going to play a big role in that.
Yeah, you're right. 110% scheme is going to play a big role in who ends up as people's edge 4 and 5. And I will say, you know, unlike years past, this is not necessarily the type of draft that is the deepest when it comes to the edge rusher position. You know, you talk about it, and again, it just seems like there's a point where everything sort of just falls off, right? So for me, you know, edge rusher 4 is a guy who I think has kind of been my very consistent edge rusher 4. In Chop Robinson from Penn State, you look at him, and again, you know, what you're basically getting is this guy with phenomenal athleticism. You have a lot of speed to power there, speed off the edge, you know, a guy again who can stand up but also go ahead, put his hand in the dirt. And then you just look at him, and one of the things you have to love about Chop Robinson is the pursuit ability. I think is amongst the best in this class. It's the best simply because you never see this guy, you know, fall behind on a play. You always see Chop Robinson some way, somehow figure out how to recover and eventually get to the football. So he's again a guy who, you know, teams that love that sort of gritty style of pass rusher, the kind of guy who's going to go ahead and the kind of guy who is going to make not necessarily splash plays, but do all the dirty work, like that right there is Chop Robinson to me. And then you get to edge rusher 5, and you know, edge rusher 5 is this incredibly kind of complicated dynamic here. And the reason being is because it's like, you don't know who it is, right? You've got Marshawn Nealon from Western Michigan, a guy a lot of people have been keeping an eye on. And then I think you could also make the serious argument for me, it's a total wild card, but I would say Darius Robinson from Missouri is a guy that can be edge rusher 5 in this class. I look at him and I, you know, just love the physical makeup that he has. Again, you're talking about a guy who's big, strong, and long. He's about 6'5", you know, 290 pounds. And then you look at the reps that he posted at the scouting combine. Like, it wasn't, you know, anything off the charts by any means, but it was still good enough to the point where, you know, after that kind of first 4, you could see him slotting in. And then you look at, you know, his play style. It's a lot of old school mentality, a lot of physicality there. You know, the type of guy who's going to go ahead and play through the whistle and just win on pure effort rather than talent or skill.
Yeah, Darius Robinson is a very interesting player, right? Because he's kind of the hybrid between being an edge guy and an interior player, right? I see a lot of, actually, if you look at his RAS score, for instance, he's got a very similar kind of physical profile to Eric Armstead, who was just, you know, released by the 49ers, signed by the Jaguars. You know, if you're the 49ers, maybe you consider making him your Eric Armstead replacement, right? Because he kind of has a similar skill set where he can defend the run on early downs, but probably not the most explosive athlete off the edge. That's probably the biggest knock I have on Darius Robinson is that he's just not overly explosive or bendy or flexible. He's more of an interior pocket pusher. But his run defense ability is very impressive, right? So I agree with you on your edge 4, though. Chop Robinson, for me, is my 4th edge guy as well. And, I mean, I saw somebody mention this on Twitter. I forget who said it, but Chop Robinson's basically going to have the Robert Quinn career arc where he's just that explosive lightning in a bottle, speed rusher off the edge, where he's got an insane first step, probably the best first step in this draft class. Really ridiculous bend around the edge. But outside of that, he's probably a bit of a one-trick pony. You know, he's not the best run defender, which I think is going to be a big problem for a lot of teams that want a three-down edge, and that might lower him on some team's board in terms of being a first-round guy. But I think he's got insane athletic ability, and I think the pass rushing potential is very high because of that first step, because of that bend ability. He's undersized, and I think that's going to be the thing that kind of makes or breaks his career, is that, you know, how is he going to be deployed in the NFL? You know, what type of scheme is he going to go to? Who's he playing alongside? And can he develop some counters to his game? You know, can he develop a spin move to his game, or, a cross chop move to kind of add to that? Can he bulk up a little bit and add a little bit more power of a power profile to his game? Probably not, but, the speed he has around the edge and the bend he has around the edge is very enticing, I think. So, Chop Robinson, he's my number four. I would still take a chance on him in the first round. I think he does have first round tools in terms of the athleticism. He has a pretty good pass rushing profile from his time at Penn State. I know the pressures weren't there, but come on, he's playing in the Big Ten, where teams run the ball 50 times a game. And, you know, it's like going back into a time portal for most of these matchups, right? So he didn't really have the opportunity to really pin his ears back and really get after quarterbacks in the Big Ten. But when he did, you saw the tools on display. He does have that ability to kind of, take over games, because if a tackle can't handle his speed, he just puts a ton of pressure on those guys with his ability to threaten the edge. Now, for my edge five, I'm kind of going to cheat here a little bit, because I think it depends a lot on the scheme that you're putting these guys in. Like, for instance, if I'm looking for more of a stand-up outside linebacker type, I think Jonah Ellis out of Utah makes a lot of sense. 21 years old, probably one of the most polished pass rushers in this draft class as well. Not the best run defender in the world. He had some injuries that he dealt with last year, but a very productive player for Utah as a pass rusher. For me, though, as my edge five, if I'm looking at this from a Bears standpoint, Marshawn Neyland out of Western Michigan is the guy for me. He's a guy who's been rising steadily up draft boards that I've seen. I saw him as kind of like a early day three, late day two guy, maybe like a month ago. Now I'm seeing a lot more in the second round conversation, which I think is where he belongs. He is a big edge rusher, 6'3", 275 pounds is what he was listed at Western Michigan. He's got long arms, and for him, he's kind of very similar to Jared Verse in that both of these guys really rely on that power profile in terms of converting speed to power, having that, first step off the edge. Neyland in his workout had a 9.54 unofficial RAS score, relative athletic score, just insane what he was able to do at his size. Came at 6'3", 267 pounds, which is prototypical 4'3 defensive end size, I think. 34 and a half inch arm. So, the Eberflus is going to love a guy because of that arm length, right? He's always looking for guys who have that arm length. Good 40-yard dash, 4.75 40-yard dash, 35 and a half inch vertical jump. So he's got the explosiveness, and he's more agile than I think he gets credit for at his size, right? So he's a full package athletically. It's just a matter of putting it all together with the tools that he has. He relied a lot on the bull rush at Western Michigan. That's really all he had to do to dominate his level of competition. I think it's going to be more of a transition for him in the NFL, having to put together more moves to get after the quarterback. But he's an insanely good run defender off the edge, which I think especially this front office and this coaching staff is going to value immensely. And I think he's a guy who's versatile as well. You can rush him off the edge. He's not the bendiest guy, but Western Michigan really, from the games that I saw, they kind of experimented using him as a stand-up rush linebacker over guards in the center, where he can just build up speed and just go full force right into guards and centers one-on-one and just push the interior of the pocket with his strength. And I would like to see whatever team drafts him in the NFL, see them experiment with that, kind of similar to Za'Darius Smith with the Minnesota Vikings. Well, not the Minnesota Vikings, now the Cleveland Browns, but we saw him with the Minnesota Vikings and Green Bay Packers and Ravens really be effective in that role as a stand-up linebacker rushing in the interior. Different kind of rush style, whereas Darius Smith is more about using length and finesse moves to get after quarterbacks, whereas Nealon is all power. But he's very intriguing for me. I like his upside. I think he can be a very good number two edge rusher within a year or two. I'm not sure if he's going to be a number one guy, but I think he can be very impactful in that role as that second edge rusher where he can defend the run, get a lot of cleanup sacks, push the pocket, you know, create pressure on quarterbacks through that lens. And he's a guy whose motor never stops, right? And for a defense that relies on hustle and hustling to the football, you want guys that, you know, have a nonstop motor that just get after it. So we've talked about some of the top guys in this draft class. Before we get to some sleepers, you said, and get to our defensive tackles in this draft class, you know, let's talk about some guys that maybe we're not as high on compared to the consensus. I'm curious, who's the one guy in this draft class for you that maybe you're not as high on going into this at this point in the process?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's a handful of guys because I just think that this is one of the weakest edge rusher classes, or not even weakest, but one of the weaker edge rusher classes that we've kind of seen compared to years past, right? Like, there's none of these guys, I think, that are kind of being pegged as surefire top five picks. It's all like, hey, pick number six onwards. But to me, you know, one guy that I just don't understand the legitimate kind of hype around would be Brennan Jackson from Washington State. Now, I look at him and I say, okay, you know what? He has everything needed to fit into your kind of prototypical 4-3 defense. But, and you certainly, I think, see the passion for the game of football out there every single time. But I also ultimately look at him and I kind of go ahead and say, you know, there just isn't anything that's overly impressive there in terms of what he's able to go ahead and do. Like, yes, he has a high motor, and yeah, he's pretty explosive. But then again, you never really see those two things tied together in terms of his production, in terms of his ability to go ahead and, you know, be the reason that offensive lines are having to go ahead and chip edge rushers constantly. So Brennan Jackson's just the guy where, you know, there's something there, but I don't necessarily think that he's as good as some people are making him out to be.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Yeah, for me, it's a guy who's gotten some first-round bugs, but most see him as a second-round player, and that's going to be Chris Braswell out of Alabama. Somebody who, you know, for all of his profile, a lot of people put him off as a, you know, very hyper-athletic edge rusher who kind of has the physical tools for the position. I don't know. I go back and I watch his tape at Alabama, and I was very underwhelmed with what I saw in terms of, you know, being that lightning in a bottle type of guy who has, you know, a high ceiling because of his traits. I think he's got good physical traits, but like nothing. It's not like a Chop Robinson where, you know, his athleticism really jumps off the screen when you watch him. Chris Braswell, he's a solid athlete, but nothing really spectacular or special there. And when you're talking about a guy who's going to be considered a late first round, early second round type of guy, if he's not going to have elite tools to build off of, I would like to see more polish in terms of, you know, his pass rush moves. And I just did not see that level of guy to me. I think he benefited a lot from Dallas Turner being on the opposite side of him. He had a lot of cleanup pressures and cleanup sacks because of that, a lot of one-on-one opportunities because of the attention that Dallas Turner provided him. You know, I think he still is a day two prospect. I'm just a little bit lower on him compared to the consensus. I don't think he's a bad prospect. I've just seen some first round buzz on him. I just can't quite get there. I think he's probably going to get overdrafted a little bit just because this edge class, like you said, it's not the strongest in terms of, you know, talent at the top. But it's also like, it's not a very deep draft of edge rushers, right? So a lot of these guys are going to get pushed up the board a little bit because teams need pass rushers and they're going to take chances on guys on day two who, you know, probably in most drafts would be third round guys or early fourth round guys. You know, like I said, this is not the deepest edge rusher class. It doesn't mean that there still isn't some talent later in the draft that teams can benefit from. So if there's one guy in this draft class that you're going to bank on being that sleeper, you said, who's that guy for you?
Yeah, so for me, the one guy is going to be Muhammad Kamara from Colorado State. Again, I think he's a guy that, you know, has gotten a lot of love throughout this pre-draft process. But I also, looking at him having to play against some smaller competition, right? He kind of has fallen through the cracks. Now, Muhammad Kamara, to me, I look at him and I kind of say, okay, you know, where is he really at? First things first, you know, the reason that he's a sleeper, but also the reason that he, I think, kind of falls through the cracks just a bit is simply because you do end up seeing the production, right? Where he had, I think, 30 and a half sacks throughout his time at Colorado State. You see how many tackles for a loss he had with, you know, 46 to 47 of them. And then you also look at, you know, how well he plays in terms of that speed to power alongside his hands. But where he's really lacking is that elite length to go from being just a good to pretty much a great pass rusher. You know, right now he's listed about 6 feet, 6 foot one. I mean, he's massively undersized there compared to some of the guys that he's going to go ahead and have to take on. And then, you know, there's instances where it just seems like when he gets knocked off his feet and he's unbalanced that he's never really able to fully recover and get back into the play. So again, Muhammad Kamara is a guy that, you know, you love what he's done on film so far, but then again, it's not necessarily the kind of resume that he's put together where you're like, oh my God, this guy's going to be a surefire star.
Yeah, I'm going to cheat a little bit. I'm going to give you two names here, and they both have the same last name because they're both twin brothers, and that's the Murphy brothers out of UCLA, Grayson and Gabriel. Very similar players, both have very similar builds at about 6'3", 250 pounds. Neither are like elite athletes or anything like that, so I'm not expecting either of them to be, you know, stars or even long-term starters, but as rotational edge threes, edge fours, you know, in the NFL, I think both of them bring a skill set to where they can be productive players on their rookie contracts. Both of them are very polished pass rushers compared to some of their contemporaries in this class. You know, both defend the run at a pretty high level. Both are pretty versatile in terms of where you can line up as 4-3 guys, or, you know, ideally I see both of them as more 3-4 outside linebackers. But yeah, I think both of them are just rock solid players. I think they can come in as fourth round picks, contribute, be that solid depth pieces that edge rush, you know, edge rooms do need. You need guys that can come in there and spell your starters a little bit and give you some snaps throughout the course of the season and, you know, get some cleanup pressures and whatnot. And both these guys, I think, can really do that. Just very sound, fundamentally sound players, technically sound players. And it would surprise me if both of them end up being productive players early on in their careers because, again, not the most athletically imposing or physically imposing players, but they just really know how to get after quarterbacks, which for whatever reason, UCLA seems to be doing a really good job of developing these guys. When we get Latu, the Murphy brothers, like they are developing pass rushers that can get into the NFL right away and contribute right away, I think. And we're going to see that, I think, with those two as kind of late day two, early day three sort of guys. But we've talked about the edge rush class a little bit here. Just kind of to wrap it up with that, just I think we've said it before. It's not the strongest year, I think, in terms of edge rushers. You've got some names at the top. You've got some intriguing day two guys. But really after that, it's not the strongest group. It doesn't have that elite talent that you're really looking for. However, with this interior draft class, I think there is some really impressive talent at the top of this draft. And you combine that with some intriguing guys on day two, this is shaping up to be a pretty strong interior defensive line class. Let's start with our top five. You said, who is in your top five?
Yeah, this is a really good interior class. So for all the people that are still clamoring for the Matt Eberflus defense needs a three technique, I mean, this is kind of the draft to be able to find it. But no, man, I hear you. It's completely loaded. And, you know, number one, I think what you have is Byron Murphy the second from Texas. Number two, you've got Jerzon Newton from Illinois. Number three, you have Tavondre Sweat from Texas. And I'll say this right now about 1, 2, and 3. I mean, there's been instances where we've seen all three of them mocked into the first round at some point. I think you look at Murphy and Sweat going ahead and having the crazy combines that they did. I mean, it is no doubt in my mind that those are going to be some of the first interior defensive linemen off the board. And again, Jerzon Newton, a guy whose kind of projection's been all over the place, right? You got a guy who was at one point a top 10, top 15 pick. Now he's being talked about as a potential late round one guy, you know, a team that like those just in the playoffs would go ahead and take him, aka the Kansas City Chiefs. So again, really, you have some really good 1, 2, 3 guys there. And then I look at, you know, Byron Murphy, and I go ahead and say it's an impressive body of work that I think he's gone ahead and he's put together over the last couple of years at Texas. I look at him, and I mean, I see the frame that he has, and he's just built to play alongside the interior. He's got this really violent first step, you know, he's going to be explosive, he's able to kind of shoot the gap, play with a lot of gap integrity. And then just the combination that he has in terms of his lower body, you know, being able to easily convert speed to power, having a lot of mass, not going to be knocked around easily, and be the guy that's doing the pushing around. I mean, Byron Murphy the second is about as good as it gets. And then you get into number two here, and you have Jerzon Newton from Illinois. Now, again, he's a guy where, you know, Illinois, they're finally figuring out how to be a football school. But I look at Jerzon Newton, and I go ahead and say, okay, you know, he had really productive time down in Urbana-Champaign, and he's not going to have the most length, but he has shown the ability to constantly go ahead and set the edge and, you know, really take on the matchup against a lot of these bigger opponents. You know, he's going to go ahead and he's going to beat guys off blocks really easily. And so Jerzon Newton, again, a guy who needs to add some power to his frame, but is still phenomenal. Now, the third guy for me is going to be Tavondre Sweat. I look at him and, you know, it's not hard to say, okay, wow, there's a lot there, to the point where, let's just say the Bears trade out of 9. They trade down like to the mid-20s. Tavondre Sweat's on that board, and you've got Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus running to the podium for this guy, because I look at him and I say, you know, what you're getting is extremely tall, strong, and long edge rusher. You're getting a guy who knows how to take on blocks and, you know, has really good contact balance. And then just a guy who, you know, is going to use a handful of pass rush moves to get into the backfield and disrupt the timing of the offense. So again, he's a guy, you know, Tavondre Sweat, where the potential with him is just absolutely through the roof.
Yeah, I think, to me, I can kind of separate this into tiers. To me, at the top in my first tier, 1 and 2 is Byron Murphy and Jerzon Newton. And I think with these two, I mean, both these guys, I see them as guys who, yes, they can be that three tech for you, but they also have some versatility to play, you know, even some one tech as well. I wouldn't say they're nose tackles by any mean, but for me, Murphy, I'm going to say he's my number one right now. I think he's an absolute just athletic freak. You know, he's a bull in a china shop in there. He played actually mostly nose tackle at Texas, even with Tavondre Sweat playing alongside of him. And you would think it would be roles reversed, because Tavondre Sweat is, you know, just a mammoth of a human being in the inside. But Byron Murphy, what you notice about him is that his pad level is consistently excellent, consistently stays low to the ground. And this guy is strong at the point of attack. He does not get pushed off his spot very often. He just gets after it. Very explosive first step, gets into the backfield, you know, penetrates the backfield very exceptionally. And he's got power. He's got some finesse to his game. He's got speed. He's got some bend around guards and centers to get after quarterbacks. The dude was just a pressure machine at Texas as an interior guy, just constantly disruptive. And I see a guy who's going to be an absolute stud at the next level. Whether he's a three tech, whether he's playing more one tech, like, he's going to be an impact player no matter what scheme you put him in. He's not the longest guy in the world, but I think he can play with such good leverage that he can make up for that. So John Newton is a guy who we've been talking about as being in the conversation for defensive lineman one, even going back to last year. He was the number one guy at the beginning of the year, and he didn't do anything to really lose that spot. It's just that I was more impressed with what Murphy put on film. But Newton, for 2 years in a row now coming out of Illinois, has been really impressive. I mean, he's about as good as you're going to get for a interior pass rusher coming into the NFL. And I wouldn't be against putting him as number one either, because his production was really that good over the last 2 years. I mean, you're talking about a guy in 2022 who had nearly 60 pressures as an interior player, which is insane. You know, especially in college and especially playing in the Big Ten, but he was extremely productive, elite production in his second year at Illinois. Last year as a player at Illinois, this year not as productive, but he was dealing with an injury over the back half of the year, so you kind of give him a little bit of a pass for that. But he's an insanely good pass rusher, good run defender as well. He's a full package. I think both of these guys are going to be impact from day one. Pass rushers from the inside, both can defend the run at a pretty high level as well. Like, they're complete interior defensive linemen. And, you know, for the Bears specifically, those are two guys that you're targeting if you're looking to upgrade at that three tech position. Like, yeah, Dexter is a nice piece, but is he going to be like the long-term star to build around that spot? I think you look at these two, they are definitely, you know, players that you would draft over a Dexter to play that role, right? And it has nothing to do with Dexter being a bad player. It's just that these two are in a different tier, different level of players here is what we're talking about. So to me, those are the only two really bona fide first round picks in this year's draft for that position. Beyond that, though, it really gets interesting because there are some intriguing players on day two, and it was really hard to kind of put them in order, right? Because there's like two types of guys. We have really three almost. We have like the hybrid defensive end, defensive tackles that we kind of talked about earlier with Darius Robinson. We had a true nose tackle like Devondre Sweat, who, again, not much of a pass rusher, but the run defense he provides, the size he has on the inside is really impressive. And then you have a bunch of like undersized three techs who just pin their ears back and get after quarterbacks, whether it's Braden Fiske, whether it's Michael Hall Jr. out of Ohio State. There are a lot of guys who kind of had that profile in this draft. So for me, it was kind of tough to put my final three in order. I'll say for number three, for right now, I'm going to say that Michael Hall is probably going to be my guy at number three, just because I think he has the best pass rushing profile of the guys that I mentioned here. I wouldn't draft him until like the mid to late, you know, late second round, early third round, though, is probably when I would take a chance on him. After that, you're probably looking at Devondre Sweat out of Texas because of he kind of offers that run-stopping, you know, nose tackle profile. And then number five for me, I'm probably going to go Chris Jenkins out of Michigan, who has a good athletic profile, really good run defender. I think he has got more pass rushing upside than he gets credit for. But there are a couple other guys I think are in that conversation as well, whether you're talking about Ruke or Horoho out of Clemson. And then, like I said, Braden Fisk out of Florida State, who kind of have more of that pass rushing three tech role that you're kind of looking for.
And again, all three of these guys, Michael Hall Jr., Chris Jenkins, and Braden Fisk, you could kind of put in as 3, 4, 5, 6 in some sort of combination. I look at Michael Hall Jr. and I'm pretty confident in saying, yeah, he's going to be my number four guy. But why is he not higher up? Let's just start with that. Because you look at him and you kind of say, well, where does he really fit, right? Yes, he's going to be a three technique. Yeah, he's going to be a guy that in your 4-3, your one gap schemes, essentially, he's going to be a really good fit there. But then again, you know, he's not the strongest or the tallest guy on the planet. So that's definitely working against him. You know, it's interesting because when we look at a guy like Michael Hall Jr. compared to some of the other three techniques that we've discussed on the podcast. I mean, Michael Hall does not have the length needed to kind of be that bona fide three technique. I'm sorry, you know, but then you also look at him and you go ahead and say, okay, you know, the high motor is definitely there. He definitely had a really good week at the Senior Bowl. He went ahead and was able to basically absorb a high level of contact, but then just keep continuing to fight. So again, Michael Hall Jr., a guy where, you know, you don't necessarily like the limitations with the size, but you do love the intangibles and the physicality it brings. Now, Chris Jenkins to me is my number five guy, and for a really good reason. So I look at him and I say, okay, again, you're getting a guy that can fit in a 3-4 or a 4-3. Again, a guy who has NFL bloodlines that run through him, but then also a player, right, who went ahead and is able to basically dictate the matchups at the line of scrimmage, is going to play through the whistle every single time, and then a guy who, you know, can fit into a one or a two gap defense, where in the sense that if you line him up as a zero technique, he could be a zero technique because he's taking on two gaps. If you line him up as a one or a three, well, he can take on either of those gaps and be playing in a one gap scheme. And the best thing about him is this, is that, you know, the variety of pass rush moves that Chris Jenkins brings to the table allows you to really understand and see why he's continuing to get better.
Yeah, it's a really tough kind of class to kind of pinpoint who's better than which, right? Because there are so many skill sets you're looking for. Chris Jenkins, like you mentioned, like, yeah, like he can play some 3-4, he can play some 4-3. He's probably better off in a 4-3 because he's not the biggest guy. He does have 34-inch arms, which just does help him with leverage and, you know, getting after the quarterback a little bit with that long arm, you know, bull rush. But he's more of a run defender at this stage of his career, right? It's very interesting because, you know, I look at this draft and I'm not as like super high on the tier two defensive linemen that I thought I would be, which is why I had a hard time kind of ranking them. So let's just get into kind of guys that we're maybe a little bit lower on. And I've already mentioned mine here, and I'll get into a little bit more detail about it. But who's that guy for you that maybe you're just not quite as high on?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough for me, right? But I would definitely say Leonard Taylor III from Miami is a guy who I am just not as high on. Again, I think with Leonard Taylor, what you're basically getting is this, is a lot of people look at his size and his measurables and they say, oh, you're getting a big guy who's about 6'4" and is 303 pounds. Like, he's a guy who's going to go ahead and eat up a lot of space and, you know, really clog up run lanes. And again, you like the physicality there and you like the athletic ability, but you just don't see from a technique standpoint a very polished player, right? In the sense that there's instances where you look at him and you say, okay, there's not necessarily a lot of discipline with his hands or his feet, right? He just doesn't have the understanding of when to go ahead and strike in terms of that internal clock that's always going on for edge rushers. And then he just, you know, plays with a really poor amount of pad level. So there's a lot of, I should say, he's really rough around the edges. Now, it's also key to keep in mind that some of the defensive line coaches out there, especially at the college level, you know, one of the things that they teach is, oh, you know, just go ahead and find an opening, just go ahead and play. Like, they do that here at NIU with James Esser, who's supposed to be a fifth or sixth round draft pick this year, but, you know, is probably going to go undrafted. You know, it's the same, I feel like, with Leonard Taylor, in the sense that his D-line coach was just like, as well as the rest of the Miami D-line, it was just like, oh, just go ahead, you know, forget playing with any sort of gap integrity. Just find a spot, occupy it, and make a play.
Yeah, Leonard Taylor, he's probably one of the most disappointing watches for me this past year because I had really high expectations for him. He was my DT2 going into the year, and he just never literally lived up to that, and he hasn't really helped himself in the pre-draft process as well. If I had to pick one guy who I'm a little bit lower than, I'm going to say Braden Fisk. I'm going to pump the brakes on him a little bit. I'm seeing a lot of early round two hype on him recently. And a lot of that is because he was an absolute freak show with his athletic testing, which is important for this position especially. You want guys that have those high-end physical traits to build around there and develop. That is a big part of this. But with him, he's undersized, right? He's not the longest guy in the world. He's getting it pushed around the run game. And he's someone who he's probably going to be more of a pass rushing special. I know a lot of people are saying, you know, his athletic profile compares similarly to Aaron Donald. There's only one Aaron Donald, guys. We need to get past this. Not every undersized, hyper athletic interior pass rusher is going to be, you know, the next instant all pro Hall of Fame pass rusher, right? He can do some similar things in terms of being that, you know, bolt of lightning off the edge, but he is not in that tier. He made some impressive plays at Florida State this past year, but he wasn't necessarily dominant by any means. I think in most drafts, he'd probably be better off as like a third round guy. You know, take a chance on him there, take a chance on the tools that he does have. I'm not sure I take him in the second round, though. And it's, again, it's kind of similar to Chris Braswell at the edge position. I'm not saying he's a bad prospect or that I wouldn't draft him. It's a matter of value and where you're going to draft him, right? And I think that's kind of the big thing with him. But I can see why teams would be intrigued by his skill set and what he brings to the table. In terms of sleepers, who's a sleeper for you in this draft?
Yeah, man. I mean, these sleepers for me, I feel like are kind of tough to go ahead and really analyze, you know, because I'm not overly, I want to say, like, in love with some of the, you know, players here that are going to kind of have to go ahead and hear their names called. But I will say this, right? It's weird because any of these guys you could kind of consider like quote unquote sleepers, but I definitely do think that McKinley Jackson is a guy that I'm intrigued by, you know, playing here at Texas A&M. You know, you're getting a guy who, again, is about 6'1", 332 pounds, and, you know, he can line up as a 0-1 or a 3 technique. He's really explosive and got a very explosive first step. But then again, the thing with him is this, is that there's instances where he's just got to learn, hey, you have to shed the block and just go instead of going ahead and staying in your initial assignment. So there's instances where, you know, you look and you say, okay, there's some potential there. There's a guy there that, you know, needs to know and understand that sometimes it's just all about a pop on the offensive lineman and then go ahead and pursue the ball carrier. So he's a guy that's got a lot of mental growth to undertake throughout the first part of his career.
Yeah, for me, my sleeper is Tyler Davis out of Clemson. I just think he doesn't have like the greatest physical tool set, but he's an elite run defender at Clemson. Very solid player. I think he's going to be a very good rotational player right away in the NFL. And he's just a safe bet for me on day three. I see him a lot in my mock drafts where he's available in the fifth round. I think that's an absolute steal. He's going to come in right away. He could be, you know, I'm not sure if he's a traditional three tech, but he can play all over the defensive line, just be a really solid piece. And on day three, that's what you're looking for. You're not looking for a star. You're looking for a guy who can just contribute. That's the guy for me in this draft. Okay. With that said, that's going to wrap it up, I think, for this position preview, looking at the defensive line and this year's draft. I think overall, I'd say it's a very interesting group. You know, I would not be opposed to the Bears, you know, if they can draft a wide receiver in round one, maybe double dipping at this position in the draft. But we'll see how it all plays out. There is some intriguing talent at the top. There is some talent on day two that's kind of intriguing. But I think ultimately it's going to come down to the team fit, you know, who kind of fits what they're looking for, what type of skill set they're looking for. And, you know, ultimately, who has that high upside? Because I think this regime does look for guys who kind of has those physical tools to build around and the high upside, not necessarily like the floor, really, because they want guys that, you know, have that potential to be really impactful players, right? So it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. But for all of our listeners here today, make sure you like and subscribe to us on wherever you get your podcast here for us at the Bear Report and Picks for Polls. You can make sure to follow us on social media as well, at Picks for Polls on Twitter. You can follow the Bear Report at Bear Report as well. For us here, you said, where can our listeners find you and find your work?
Yeah, guys, you can check me out on the Bear Report website. You can also follow me on Twitter at Usaid Kosho. For the Bear Report website, I do have a scouting report dropping every single day. So I just dropped one on Xavier Worthy, as well as another one on Cedric Van Pran and Adonai Mitchell. So, you know, something daily for you guys to go ahead and read over your cup of coffee.
Absolutely. Make sure to check out a lot of those at the Bear Report over the next few weeks. As for me, you can follow me on Twitter at AJFreeman25. You can find my work on the Bear Report as well. And until next time, Bears fans, more. But until then, have yourself a great rest of your week and bear down.